Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 75 of Competitive Magic with the Carnies. I'm your host from Italy, Andrea Mengucci, and joining me we have Anthony Lee from Australia.
Hola.
Javier unfortunately cannot join us this week. We have an episode, this is going to be me and Anthony, kind of finishing off something of the spoilers, which is now fully out of the Outlaws of Thunder Junction, whose pro-release will be this weekend. We're going to talk about the impact of the cards in modern Pioneer Legacy format. We're not going to talk about Standard because, of course, it is the PT format in a few weeks, so we'll be talking about everything Standard after the PT, but until then, we just prefer to not do that. And at the end, we're going to talk about maybe some deck building that can happen with some of the new cards in Modern, because I have a tournament this Sunday. It's going to be Modern. What about you, Anthony? Are you going to go to the pre-release?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'll probably decide on the weekend. Might be fun. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, the pre-release is always a nice opportunity to, I guess, have a first hand on the cards. Actually, I'll be playing on Wednesday the streamer event on Arena, so I'll be streaming Arena again after a while. I'm gonna be doing a lot of draft and I guess comprehension reading of the new cards to make sure that I don't miss anything for when the set comes on Magic Online. Yeah, I definitely need. It's just so many words on this card, and sometimes I just kind of give up, so I just play them, and then I realize as things as they happen.
Oh, some people learn by doing, not by reading, so they're totally
exactly
legitimate.
Yeah. So something that happened in the set is that it's not just the 276 cards that are going to be legal in Standard and every other format, but also the set called Big Score, which is a bunch of Mythic Rare. I don't actually know how much they show up in boosters, but with the new Play Booster, you can open packs with multiple Rares and Mythics. But they are a bunch of cards that are pretty powerful, I would say. So it is going to be an additional way that they put cards into Standard other than the regular set. So we'll have cyborg cards like Rest in Peace, Pest Control, Grand Abolisher, effects that are going to be super important, as well as some really powerful cards like Memory Vessel and cards that you read, super powerful. They're not in the main set, but they're still in Standard. So, yeah. What do you think about this set? What do you think about the big
score? I think
they're
about 1 in 5 boosters, if that helps, by the way. Didn't you mention how rare they are?
Oh, wow. So, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting.
Quite common, actually.
Yeah, I mean, they do want you to be able to get the cards. So, I think it's interesting. A lot of these designs are quite interesting as well, because this came from a scrapped Aftermath set, or a scrapped set similar to March of the Machine Aftermath. So I guess they picked the ones that were interesting and put them in as a bonus sheet in these packs, which is cool. I mean, it's a lot of content in the boosters between the regular set, the bonus sheet, and then the big score cards as well. I don't know. I won't complain about more cards to look at. Seems interesting.
Yeah, the fact that our Mythic Rare is not really a thing because they come up 1 in each 5 regardless. They're all the same rarity. I guess that's mostly for just Arena wildcards topic.
Oh, sure. I don't know. Like, I don't know what the reasoning would be either way, but
yeah,
doesn't really matter in terms of how the cards play.
Of course. All right, so let's get into it. Let's talk about a bunch of these cards that, last week, if you've missed the episode 74, we talked about most of the cards in the main set, whereas now we're going to mostly talk about the cards in the big score set. So let's start with Lost Jit. This is, of course, a throwback to Umezawa's Jit. The picture is very similar. It's a legendary artifact equipment. It costs only 1 mana, and in formats with Urza Saga, that is a big deal because that means that you can get it for free. And it's an equipment, and it says whenever equipped creature deals combat damage, you put a charge counter on it. Just one, not like Dumazawa's Jit when you put two. Remove a charge counter, you untap target land, target creature cannot block this turn, or you can put a +1/+1 on equipped creature. And the keep cost is just one, so it's a completely halved Umezawa's Jit to cost one less to equip, one less to cast, and you only put one counter. So, yeah, I mean, it's a super interesting card, of course. You can think about decks like, once again, Hammer Time, just like we talked about last week with the equipment that gives a +1/+0 haste and ward one. But is the power level there for this card to be good in Modern?
I'm sure it isn't. I can't really imagine putting this card in my deck with Urza Saga. It just seems incredibly slow. Like, you have to deal combat damage multiple times with a creature to be able to have this have any effect, and even then it doesn't seem particularly powerful. The biggest thing that's a strike against this is that I don't think it adds anything that your deck doesn't otherwise do. So for example, cards, I think we mentioned this last week as well when considering Lava Spur Boots, but for example, cards like Shadow Spear or Ginger Brute actually do add some kind of functionality to your deck that you otherwise don't have, right? I don't really get what the Jitter does that you don't otherwise have. I mean, like, your creature can get bigger, but your deck already does that. It lets you get through blockers, but only after you've done that once already. Like, that doesn't seem very useful. Like, the untapped target land thing doesn't seem very useful in Urza Saga decks where the curve is generally very low. And again, you have to have invested quite a bit to get this. Like for this card to ever be worth a card, you have to have multiple triggers, right? But then I have to deal combat damage twice with it. It's quite difficult, I think. I think the card is just not very... I think it's just not very powerful. I'm thinking about it in Pioneer now, it also seems very weak there. And if you just wanted to be able to get an equipment for whatever reason, like the trigger, your Pure Steel Paladin or something, there's already Shadow Spear, which does, like I said, add something that you don't otherwise have, like the ability to gain a lot of life. Or to be able to preemptively get through blockers in a way that this doesn't, because you need to have already done so with this card. Yeah, I would be very surprised if this card was playable. Yeah.
Yeah, this card definitely felt like a very, very safe way to... Because, of course, Umezawa's Jit was one of the strongest cards in Standard. It's currently banned in Modern, which, I mean, doesn't say much. There's a lot of things that are banned in Modern. But, yeah, I mean, this is definitely something that people wanted to hear, and, you know,
yeah, I mean, also a lot agree of people with you. Naturally, I don't think this card would. Naturally, it's natural to want to talk about the cards where there's a very clear intentional parallel. But something that I think is interesting about the way they design the cards is that when they make those intentional parallels, I'm sure that they are extra safe, extra careful, right? So,
yeah, for example, with the Oko, the Oko Planeswalker, Oko the Ringleader, you know, the -1 make an elk token is definitely a very safe...
Or like when they made, after the first Teferi was so miserable for people, they were very careful with the second one to make sure that it didn't upset people. So, you know, stuff like that.
But it still ended up costing 100 euro to somebody.
Oh, that wasn't the second one. I was talking about, you know, Hero of Dominaria to Time Raveler. But, you know, it doesn't work out that way every time. But most of the time, I would say they try to be more careful. Okay.
All right, let's get to another one where I actually think we'll see some Modern play. Harvester of Misery. This is a 3BB, so a total of 5 mana. It's a spirit with menace, and when enters the battlefield, other creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. And it has basically the channel mechanic of you pay 2, you discard this card from your hand, and target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn, and it's a 5/4. Where I think this card will see play, it's in Living End. For example, in Living End, you are already seeing play of cards like Dismember and Bonecrusher Giant to deal with Doty Woodwalker. And I think this card fits the team better, as in you can just, you know, fill your graveyard, reanimate it, get Descend 8 and all the things. Of course, Living End is now nerfed with the ban of Violent Outburst, but it's still a deck, and I think Doty Woodwalker remains and Ragavan remain problems, and I like this card. I think it's also like not that hard to cast, and Living End very often gets to outcast their threat post sideboard.
Yeah, it's also quite relevantly a black card, which does matter in the Living End deck for helping you evoke grief, I suppose. So I suppose it's better than I suppose it's better than Bone Crusher Giant. Whether you want to play many Bone Crusher Giants or similar effects in Living End is another question altogether, I think. I am a little bit dubious of this card. It does seem like it's mostly only good against Stealthy Voidwalker, and the ability to kill small creatures is not super valuable in Living End, I think. Like, it is very exactly that you want to kill Stealthy Voidwalker, right? I think Ragavan sometimes matters, but not in every deck, and not always. Like, any time after turn one on the play, it's not too exciting, and this doesn't really help with Ragavan on the play, which, you know, it doesn't normally do anyway. I mean, which normally Living End can't do anyway. So this doesn't really change that. I suppose it's an upgrade to Bone Crusher, but I think only a small one, but it is an upgrade. Oh, I just don't know if you want to play Bone Crusher in the first place. Like,
yeah, it's a black card, and, you know, you could have played Shriek Maw already, but I guess Shriek Maw doesn't kill Dothy, so played Shriek Maw. But I feel like it's an effect that I don't think Living End has. As you said, it's unclear whether you want it or not. It's just cool that it's available, and, you know, we are discussing these new cards, and I think it is one of the most playable ones, definitely. Alright, let's get to the next one. It is a Memory Vessel. This is a throwback to another card similar to the Lost Jit. Of course, we're talking about Memory Jar, which is a card that is currently banned in Legacy and in the reserve list, so it hasn't been around very much. You see it basically only in Vintage Cube these days. It's an artifact, 5 mana, it costs 2 red, so 3 colorless and 2 red. And it says, tap, exile it. Each player exiles the top 7 cards of their library. Until your next turn, players may play the exiled card this way, and they can't play cards from their hand, activate only as a sorcery. So, what happens is that you're able to, of course, cast this, tap it, exile your hand. You can't play cards from your hand, and you can only play cards from your top 7. But what happens, and why is it very much worse than Memory Jar, is that your opponents will also get to do the same on their turn, whereas Memory Jar was basically just you draw 7, because your opponent cannot do anything in their turn with the 7 cards you give them. Also, activate only as a sorcery is another downside, so obviously this card has a, you know, they didn't just put Memory Jar into Standard, Modern, Pioneer, and Legacy as well, because again, it's Memory Jar is banned there. But, you know, there's a, it's still similar, and there's Carnegie Creator and decks with a ton of mana in Legacy. So I feel like, Anthony, during a 4 season, one of the most recent 4 season, there was a judge call because at some point a player card minused and picked up Memory Jar, right? And you know, and the opponent was like, are you sure that card is legal? Because I've never seen it in a while. I doubt it's legal. And yeah, it turns out it wasn't. So maybe that player now is going to be interested in putting Memory Vessel in their sideboard.
I suppose so. Yeah, I don't know too much about this, to be fair. I think I just don't know much about Legacy, so I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I mean, outside of Legacy, the ways you can exploit this card, I guess, it's with, you know, you got a ton of mana, and this is another of these, like, time twister type of effect, whether you pay some amount of mana, you draw 7, although I don't think there's too many formats where you can exploit a thing like this.
No, that seems quite difficult. Yeah, I'm not really sure. Like, it does involve making a ton of mana, and I don't think, and I mean, obviously the main deck that would have a ton of mana in Khan in Modern is Tron, and that doesn't really use this well, so I'm not really sure where else it would fit. It does seem like a powerful card, I just don't know where it would go. One to keep in mind for future, maybe.
Yeah, exactly, right? Because also the double red is obviously, it's a big deal, and I think that maybe, again, it's something that Legacy can do with all the red ritual. It's a cool card, and I think one that deck builder may wrap their head around.
Yeah, I'm sure there's something you can do that's interesting with this. Like, it is a powerful effect.
Yeah. Let's get to the next one. We have Molten Duplication. This is a sorcery for one and a red. So it costs 2 mana, and it says, create a token that's a copy of target artifact or a creature you control, except it's an artifact in addition to its other type. It gains haste until end of turn, and you sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. So it's like a 2 mana clone until end of turn. And, well, it's only 2 mana. This is cheap. This is not 5 mana. The potential is there for this card to be quote-unquote broken.
What sorts of things could be used with this? So, I mean, I know that you mentioned that there's a combo with Dual Caster Mage, which is the next tab.
Yeah, that's something...
That's...
Yeah, exactly. That's something that I found on the... on Twitter, that it's a 2-card combo with Dual Caster Mage, but Dual Caster Mage isn't modern legal.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying to think what are the sorts of effects you could use with Molten Duplication. Like, are there ways you can cheat something and then copy it? Maybe there's some sort of combo there. It being a sorcery makes it a little harder to do that, I suppose.
Maybe
you just have to have an expensive thing in play.
It's a sorcery.
I don't know, like, if... It's... Like, if you just have, like just anything that's large, you know. Is this something with like a good enough ETB that you could feasibly copy?
Yeah, this next tab open that I was going to talk about next, the Vaultborn Tyrant. This is a great ATB and great dice.
You're chilling, so.
No, but maybe like it has to die. It has to die, and this is a dice trigger, you know, something like.
Well, I mean, I don't want to have to put like my awesome giant dinosaur in play before this card is good. Like, I'm trying to figure out if there's something like smaller, that's effective with this. Because this seems like it's maybe applicable as a fair card somehow, but like it seems like it has to be some sort of hybrid function. Like it does something fair mostly, but maybe then there's some sort of combo.
Crackling Drake.
Sure, stuff like that. Yeah, that's the kind of area that I'm trying to figure out whether you could play something like this.
You get an attack. I mean, the problem with these cards is that they're kind of like, this is what I like to call the A plus B cards, and often this card is like dead on its own, and you don't want to put too many A plus B cards in your deck. I mean, I guess it's fine if it's a combo like Dual Caster Mage.
Well, I'm trying to figure out if you could make this card like less like that because it's relatively open-ended. Like, if you had a big combo with it, but if you could also copy something like a Bloodthirst Harvester or whatever, and, you know, to cash it out, right? That's the most appealing thing. When your combo pieces have a secondary application, then your deck is a lot more stable in general because it's harder to strand you with bad cards. So I don't know what the combo application is with this card, but if there is one, it does seem like one where it's not too difficult to build in a way where you have some kind of secondary use for it, which I think is the most important thing. Like, I really have no idea about any specifics. I just am trying to think about this type of card in general, I suppose.
You remember the card Ratadabrik? I think it is something similar to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a deck in Standard with Bloodthirst Harvester.
Oh, you're thinking of Jaxus like the Troublemaker, right? I remember that deck.
You mean... Yeah. This is,
okay, maybe there's something like that. Yeah, maybe that.
Yeah, it's again, like, similarly to the Memory Jar, this card has power level, and it's a very unique effect, whereas, again, the Lost Jit is, like, it's just an equipment.
Yeah, like, it's not really about, like, we're not trying to figure out exactly how good or bad a card is for the most part, but how much potential it has, and a lot of that is based on uniqueness, right? Like, can this card do something that wasn't possible to do before? I think that's the most important thing in spoiler season because, you know, in not that much time, we'll find out what the power level is. But in terms of what's possible, I think that's a lot more interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like if you're listening to this podcast or this episode, you're not really looking to find the next, you know, broken modern deck 75 cards, but mostly you're just looking to kind of hear some of the cards that may be interesting. And that may like spark maybe your deck building thoughts and ideas as well. So.
I don't know. If you have a broken Modern 75, I wouldn't mind hearing it. But
I don't have it. Oh, okay. I don't have it. Sorry.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. All right. Let's go on. We have this giant dinosaur, which I pull out here because it has so much tech. So it's a 7-mana 6/6 trample. It's double green it cost. And it says, when it or another creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield, you gain 3 life and draw a card. And then when it dies, you make a copy of it. If it's not a token, so only once. But this is just so much text. And, you know, there's obviously ways you can cheat creatures into play. You have creativity, you have transmogrify, you have persist as well in modern. Of course, there's better targets like Archon of Cruelty or whatever else you can do. But this is like a very good ATB effect. Not as good as Archon of Cruelty, but in Pioneer, you don't have Archon of Cruelty. You have to put into play Atraxa, which has not to be proven so successful. I don't know if this is, but it is a different idea.
Well, it's a big thing that this stacks very well in multiples, right? Like if you put two into play at once of creativity, they see each other and trigger each other.
Oh, wow.
Right?
So you gain 12 and you draw 4?
Should be correct, right? I think it should work that way. And if it does, then that seems quite appealing because I think a problem with creativity decks in Pioneer currently is that they cap out. So like you can do X equals 1 to hit an attraction, but X equals 2 doesn't add that much because it's obviously some limit to how useful drawing even more cards can be, as upsetting as that may be to some blue players. And then you have some other targets, like for example Torrential Gear Hulk, but that also caps out in terms of how powerful that is, because then your X equals 1 is not very exciting. You have some things like where you can go X equals 2 to be able to hit Xenagos and World Spine Worm, but then you have problems where X equals 1 is not really sufficient, and then you have some consistency issues where if you draw either one, it stops working. But if you just have something like this, it's just like very generically good. That might bring something new to the Pioneer deck, right? Where like X equals 1 is powerful, but also X equals 2 is also like commensurately more powerful as well. So I think that's actually a substantial change. Go on.
Yeah, and this one doesn't cost 11, it costs 7.
Right, you can,
if you play the Junk Transmogrify deck that won the RC in Japan, could cast this card, you know?
I think this could be good in, this actually looks like it could be good in Pioneer creativity. I also don't, I mean, I'm not entirely sure this is worse than, I mean, it's probably worse than Archon, because it doesn't interact with your opponent, but it wouldn't shock me if this was playable a lot, like, in that realm. It is harder to interact with. And it, I think Archon has a slight ring problem as well, which this doesn't have. All right, no, yeah, I'm off it. This is not good enough. It's just not good enough to just randomly get some card advantage in one, I think. Yeah. But Pioneer, there's something.
Of course. Of course it's not better than Archon, but I guess you can't play more than 4 Archons.
You probably don't want to play more than 4, All right, I've made up my mind. I don't think it's good in modern, but I think this is quite a bit of potential in Pioneer just because all of the existing creativity hits have some scaling issues either on the lower end or the higher end, and this seems to maybe be a balance between those that didn't exist before. So, yeah, I kind of like this one. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
One thing that this card is much better than Archon is if it dies, you make a copy. So if you put it into play with Through the Breach, or again, this is not, but like you have ways to kill this creature for like Flash, for example. Of course, this is a cube topic, but whatever. But Through the Breach is something that you put into play, you gain value, you attack, and then it dies, and you do it again, and you have something in play at the end. And of course, Through the Breach costs 5, blah, 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 but.
Well,
it's good.
This is not big enough for those, I think. That's why it has to be something like creativity where you care about the smaller version. Like, this will never be the biggest thing you can do because this only wins you the game if you're playing some sort of fair game, right?
You can just do Emrakul. Yeah,
sure. So, like, you have to be playing against something relatively fair for this to be crushing. But, you know, there's quite a lot of those decks in Pioneer, so,
yeah.
All right. Good Dino.
Okay. I got a card that Anthony approved. That's not nothing. That's
what
not
do you
nothing.
Mean? I like cards. I just like different cards to the cards you like. I like this card. There you go. That's 2.
Yeah. Pest control, very, very strong in standard, of course. It's a black and white sorcery, destroy all null and permanent with mana value 1 or less. And it has cycling 2. So this card is just one of the cheapest sweeper I've seen in a while, and notably, it doesn't just kill creatures, it also kills, in Legacy, for example, Chalice of the Void, which is a huge problem. It kills, you know, Aether Vial, it kills Carpet of Flowers, it just does so much. I guess you can play it in Modern as well. It kills Amulet of Vigor, Hardened Scales, I don't know, Sigard is it, like, it's just, it does so much, and it is cycling too. I think this card is going to see play in in older formats.
Yeah, I mean, and newer. This is very easy. I mean, we played Hidetsugu Consumes All, and that was good. I mean, this is the important part of that for one less. I mean, I'm happy to give up the rest of the saga for in exchange for the hate card element of this. Yeah, I don't know. There's not much to say about this. It's a very good answer, and there's not much to say more, right? Like, if your opponent has non-land permanents with mana value 1 or less, this is good. And if they don't, this is not very good.
Yeah.
The cycling is honestly a bit of flavor text. Like, you're not really going to cycle it very often, I think. You bring it in matchups where, like, it's good, right? Like, you wouldn't make
so it. So in Pauper, the card Suffocating Fumes, which gives -1/-1 to your opponent creature, and has cycling too, gets played a lot in main deck. So I can see the same thing here, where, I don't know, a blue-white control deck with Leyline Binding, so you have access to black mana, can play this card main deck. Stuff like that.
Yeah, maybe that's possible in Pioneer. I can't really imagine cycling in Modern, or playing a card that's relatively narrow, because I think playing narrow cards is worse in Modern because it's broader. Like, the format is broader and it's faster, right? Like, those are both issues for playing a card like this.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I would play it even if it didn't have cycling, so, you know, fine.
Well, if it didn't have cycling, it would be a 100% cyber card. But it giving cycling, I think you can consider putting in your main deck. That's what I'm saying.
I think cycling is too slow to do that. So I would basically treat it as only a sideboard card, but a good one. And I would be happy. I'm very happy with the card that way. And, you know, maybe sometimes I will cycle it. Like, that's, you know, I mean, it's not like the card is worse because it has a rare option on it, right? So why not?
Yep. Okay, so let's move away from the big score. We've kind of... we have one more card that I wanted to talk to you about. Two more cards that I wanted to talk to you about. One is Simulacrum Synthesizer. That is the 2-blue artifact that says when it comes to play, you scry 2, and whenever another artifact with mana value 3 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, you make a colorless construct that gets bigger for each artifact you have. So that's the Urza Saga construct. So basically, this is a 3-mana scry 2, which isn't great, but then if you play affinity with artifact cards like Frogmite, Mirror Enforcer, or the Sojourner's Companion, or, you know, so on and so forth, you just get construct. So this card can escalate super quickly. You can kind of go off in an affinity deck in Modern.
Okay, this actually seems powerful. Obviously, there are big questions about whether an affinity deck would be playable generally, but this seems like it would be very powerful in that deck. And that's quite a substantial power increase, right? Like, you can actually go way over the top of opponents that in a way you couldn't before, especially because this effect is quite good against removal, which I think might have been a good way to fight some of the good draws from affinity.
The problem of this card is Brothers Who'd End and Dress Down, because Brothers Who'd End also kills this, and Dress Down kills all your construct. And that is being kind of one of the very easy way to deal with affinity. And when Urza Saga came out, affinity was a player in Modern and hasn't seen a player in a while. But of course, Modern Horizons 3 is near the corner, and you never know how much they want to push the archetype. So I think this card has a lot of potential in formats with free cards, with free artifacts that cost 3 or more. And, you know, Modern is definitely one of those. And Legacy.
Yeah, this definitely has a power level to be very interesting. I think I would definitely keep an eye on this card.
And the next one also is Artifact Synergy. It's called Fomor Revolt. And it's a land that says tap, add a colorless. So it comes into play on tap and gives you colorless. And then it says tap 3, tap, discard a card, look at the top X of your library, where X is the number of artifacts you control. You put one of those into your hand and the rest on the bottom in a random order. So in the aforementioned deck, Affinity, you just late game, Affinity always goes empty-handed super quickly. And if your opponent, you know, killed your creature, you might find yourself just with nothing. You can just draw your card for turn, you discard it, you have all have artifact lands and Springleaf Drum, you get your Thought Monitor, your rebuild, or your Thought Cast, and your rebuild, and... You know, this is just a land that comes simply untapped, so it's pretty free and it's quite good in that deck.
It does seem incredibly slow, which is not really in the interest of the deck. I feel like if the game gets to that stage, you have probably lost the game anyway. Like, maybe you could play one, but I don't know if it's free. Because, I mean, I think there is a significant opportunity cost in terms of the other lands you could play, right? Like, if you have to play...
Of course.
Yeah. Maybe.
It's not an artifact, so...
Yeah.
You can play artifact lands.
Yeah, I maybe you could play, like, one or something, but I think it's just probably way too slow for Modern. I wonder if you could play it in... There is an artifact deck in Pioneer. Like the blue red artifact decks, for example. Is this playable in
the Ensouled Artifact, you mean?
Yeah. I don't know if being a colorless land is too painful there, but...
The problem, it says, where X the number of artifacts you control.
Yeah, so like might not be very many.
How many artifacts? Yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that the mana base...
The mana is worse. Yeah, okay, so it's probably not going to fit in that deck.
In Modern, you have artifact lands in the form of the bridges from Modern Horizons 2.
And in Pioneer, your mana is already a bit taxed because you have to fit Darksteel Citadel in your deck. Another colorless land is relatively very expensive because it's, you know, the fifth one you've added to your deck. All right, so it's probably no good for Pioneer. For Modern, I think there's a long shot at playing one, but I feel like it might be a little too situational to justify playing even a colorless land.
Yeah. The good thing of this is that, you know, as you said, you spend a lot of mana into it. Like, you spend 3 plus this, so you spend 4 mana. But you have affinity for artifact cards. So you get, like, let's say, a Mirror Forcer or a Thought Monitor. You just cast it. You don't need to tap many mana into it.
Well, you do need to tap mana for Thought Monitor.
Yeah, I mean...
It's just so slow, you know? Like, what matchups is this good in Modern?
Yeah, I know, so... There's not going to be a land that revolutionates affinity. Like, the Simulacrum Synthesizer may actually become, like, a 4-of, and, you know, the card that makes you win games. So, but this one is just something that, again, I wanted to mention as an option that people may have missed. Okay, so, as I said, we finish with the big score, and I want to talk about a card that we missed last week that I think may see play in Pioneer. It's an uncommon, actually. It's Lively Dirge. It costs 1 and a black. It's one of those spree cards where you spend extra mana, you gain value. And this cost, it starts with 1 and a black, and then if you add 1 colorless, you search your library for a card, and you put it in your graveyard, then shuffle, so it's like an Entomb for 3 mana. And then if you pay 2 more, you can return up to 2 creatures with total mana value of 4, from your graveyard to the battlefield. So what happens is you pay 4, and you reanimate 2 creatures, similarly to what Return to the Ranks would do, or if you pay 5, you can actually grab one from your deck, put it in the graveyard, and then bring it back. Obviously, the deck I'm mentioning that can play this card is Amalia Combo, that already plays up to 4 copies of Return to the Ranks, and this card is another way for you to get your Amalia and Wagger Walker into play out of nowhere.
I think there is a big problem in that it's very expensive to put any cards that are not cheap creatures in your Amalia deck, because it has so much synergy driven by that. Is this card competitive with Return to the Ranks? I think that's tricky. My guess is not, but maybe it might be better than the 4th copy. Like, it's very hard for me to imagine playing a 5th copy of that card because it's already a little bit awkward. You're just forced to play Return to the Ranks because it's so powerful. But a lot of that is because of the Convoke ability. It is worth thinking about. This is definitely not as clear-cut as a lot of the questions in the previous cards.
I think the tiebreakers is how important is the fact that you can put 1 creature from your deck to your graveyard and then reanimate it? Like, how often you have Return to the Ranks... but you are missing your combo.
Well, yeah, very clearly. Because I mean, this card is obviously vastly worse at just doing the reanimate thing, right?
Exactly.
Hmm.
So, like, let's say you play against a... my thought with Return to the Ranks is that when you play against decks that exile your stuff, like Anger of the Gods from Phoenix was a big deal, and why I wasn't a fan of Return to the Ranks. Of course, Blue-White Control exiled your stuff very often. So... you know, that was, or Ashiok, I guess, you can also play that against, but this is not great at tutoring anyway, so never mind.
Right, but against non-Ashiok, against Anger of the Gods, this is better. Yeah, I could see that, so, Okay, that might be the best argument in terms of seeing one of these. over a return to the ranks, or maybe even in addition to, if it turns out that it's good enough for at letting you power through hate, although
I'm not very sure, but I think I could see it.
Yeah, I think it's very close. You know, into, I mean, obviously, I think once you actually play with it, then you'll be able to figure it out pretty quickly, because you'll just know every single time. Because if you don't kick it for the full five, then it's often going to be worse. But sometimes it'll be the same. Yeah, I could see it being like a one-off or something that's very good.
Yeah. So let's get now to our. I think this is the card that we're going to expect to see the most in, or like to have the biggest impact in Modern, and probably in Pioneer as well. It's Slick Shot Show Off. We talked about this card last episode. It's a 1/2 for 2, 1 in a red, Flying Haste. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, it gets +2/+0 until end of turn, and it has Plot, 1 in a red. And this is the card that, you know, both me and Anthony thought that maybe we could try and build something with it for this weekend. Again, I have a tournament of the new cards, and I want to maybe try. It's very cool to be like, I'm playing something that my like, this is something that I really enjoy when I go to a tournament with a deck, and my opponent like has to read my card because it's just so new that that they don't even know what they do with, despite they know every other card. And you know, when I do that, when I read my opponent card, I feel like they made it. You know, I feel like they did something. Let's say they accomplished something. You know, in deck building, which is always one of the fun challenges of a deck builder.
Well, I mean, strictly speaking, that's, you know, as a competitive player, I would think that many of us should. I mean, if your goal is just to maximize your win rate, you should probably not be trying to add additional goals like this, although I think it's totally valid to have these additional goals. I just want to make it clear that that sort of thing is it's not part of winning more. You know, if you really just want to win more, you shouldn't do that. But if you want to win more and also do this, that's fine, as long as you're, you know, doing it eyes wide open, you know, as long as you know what you're
For sure. I do it very rarely, because I still try to play the best deck every time, or at least a competitive deck every time. So that's why I think the last two cases of it were with Questing Druid, when, you know, almost nobody knew what the card was in Modern when I was playing at that event, and also with Titan Blade from the Karn. Like, you Karn minus, you get Titan Blade, it's another
right. Yeah, I think honestly that's one of the best things in Magic, when they legitimately are the same thing, like when playing one of these strange cards is actually the best thing you can do. I think that's one of the best moments in Magic. I think it's kind of the dream for a lot of players, and knowing that if you really sincerely do it, believing that it's the best thing, that's very rewarding. It does really feel like you made a discovery, which is awesome.
Yeah, like for example, at the Pro Tour round 4, I sit down against Arne Ushenbeth, and he went Soarin' Vein Ripper, right, against me.
Yeah.
And he went Soarin', and actually I had to read Soarin', because that's not a card you play against often. And fun fact, he was an Italian, so I had no problem reading.
He's so thoughtful.
And and then he played Vein Ripper, which I also had to read. Yeah, and then he won the game.
Makes sense. So, if you went Soarin' into Vein Ripper, yes.
Yeah, and then Seth won the Pro Tour. So I feel like, you know, achieving something like that as a competitive player at any level, it's still like super.
Well, you may also remember the example, right? From Minneapolis, right? Light Up the Night was something that you had to read as well, right?
Yes, exactly. I was at 14. I was at 10 life, couldn't really lose. And then he thinks for like 10 minutes, not 10 minutes, sorry, he thinks for like 1 minute. And I'm like, what is he doing? There's like, he can't get out. You know, I had like a Bankbuster flipped, another Bankbuster, 7 cards in hand. And then he just went Chandra, Light Up the Night, and I died. And, you know, it was interesting.
Yeah, that stuff is cool.
Anyway, Slick Shot Show Off will not be a brew for a while. It will definitely be a pillar of prowess decks, we can say. It is something very powerful, because it's like double prowess. Because you don't only deal 1 extra damage, you deal 2 extra damage. So every single Lava Dart basically deals 6 damage to your opponent. That's insane.
I think so, yes. It's a lot of potential here.
Mutagenic growth, yeah, deals 4 damage. So you have all of these. Like today I played a prowess deck because I obviously wanted to get ready to see what was the best shell. And the prowess list I played is the one that made the top 8 of a modern challenge. And it was the Gruul one with Questing Druid, but mostly was with Tarmogoyf. So lately I've been a lover of Tarmogoyf in modern, mostly from the Murktide point of view, because Murktide is very weak to pick your poison, which is the most played card in modern currently, and Tarmogoyf dodges that pretty well, you know? It doesn't even get hurt by Graveyard 8. Like today my opponent like Bashuka bogged me and Tarmogoyf the next combat was a 5/6. Because obviously it cares about your opponent graveyard as well. So I really like Tarmogoyf right now. I guess there's like less Fatal Push with Rack the Scam. So there's just, yeah, I feel like it's a good card. But I don't know, you can just simply replace Slickshot to show off in the slot of Tarmogoyf here.
You could, but I think they're kind of different cards though. With Slickshot show off, I care a lot about pure card volume, which is why I think it's inherently more attached to blue, because I think Expressive Iteration is a really big part of why I would expect Slickshot show off to be strong. It's not only that Expressive Iteration generates a lot of cards, but that when you plot the show off, maybe that's more relevant than I had realized, because I remembered that me and Javier didn't think it would be a big deal, but the fact that when you plot it, you might be able to threaten your opponent with imminent death if they tap out, and that might not be an exaggeration given how much damage you can add up very quickly with cards like Lava Dart. It seems to me that then you want to be able to exploit them having to leave up mana, right? That doesn't apply to Solitude, but for everything else they do have to have mana up to stop you from killing them with a show off for the most part. So being able to then advance your position without exposing yourself to removal becomes very valuable, which this red-green deck doesn't really do that well. Like, it does have Questing Druid, so you can Seek the Beast, but I think Expressive Iteration is just the best card in that class, and of course having more cantrips in blue makes it easier as well. Like, if you have both, like here, you have both the Seek the Beast and Expressive Iteration to exploit that, and you plot the show off and force them to start playing more passively. So I think that's really important. Like, if you want to use the plot ability well, I'm not saying that you have to. It's possible that you do just play the card the way that we thought that you would last week, and, you know, just jam it and kill your opponent quickly that way. I think you want cards like Expressive Iteration. So I think it's both things. So Expressive Iteration means you have more cards, which means more kills, more damage with the show off, but also that it lets you use the plot ability better when you can force your opponent to play passively by plotting it. Yeah. Also, another random point about plotting it, since you were talking about Pick Your Poison, is that if you have it hidden in exile, it can't be poisoned. So that's nice. You just save it up and then kill them in one go with it. So that's actually an advantage that you have with plot, I suppose. If people are specifically using sorcery speed interaction like Pick Your Poison, then the plot mechanic becomes quite a bit better. So that's interesting too, right?
Yeah, also spell pierce, like you kind of have a counter spell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you get to pick your fights a little better.
Yeah, so one question I have about the plot mechanic. Can you, like, Tishana's Tidebinder the fact that you're plotting this? And when you cast it, you're simply casting
it's just
it.
A spell, so, yeah.
Yeah, Tishana's Tidebinder or effects like that don't. Like, Teferi, you can cast it easily through a Teferi. And, like,
yep.
It's exactly the same as Foretell. Okay. Yeah, I just want to make sure how the mechanic was worded. So yeah, it's basically Foretell, but
yeah.
Okay. Well, so you know, if I had to build a set deck for a tournament this weekend. So another cool thing of this red green prowess deck was Tarfire, which actually came up so often that I was able to have a Dragon's Reach Channeler in Delirium because of Tarfire, like on turn 2. So,
kind of fun.
Tough Fire obviously is the shock with the super type of tribal. So you pump the Tarmogoyf. I was able to have 7/8 Tarmogoyf, you know. But mostly it was just very good with Unholy Heat and Dragon's Reach Channeler. And that's something I've never really done. So this is something maybe back cooler that happened to me today.
Back in the day, we used to use this to enable Traversy Uvonwald. So, yeah, Tarfire as a Delirium enabler has been around. That's a bit of a flashback. Yeah, good memories.
Yeah, I was also playing questionable cards like Abundant Harvest and Crush Through. I'm not sure I would play those again, but it was interesting. What do you say? What is your thought on Mutagenic Grow? Because none of these two lists that did well this weekend, the more regular Tumor Prowess or the Red Green Prowess, as I showed you, played any copy of Mutagenic Growth. What do you think?
I don't think you really need it. I think it makes sense when you're trying to be extremely fast in general. I think it makes sense, like, it might make sense to play one of that card or maybe some even more of them if you're playing Slingshot Show-Off, because then you are more, you're very explicitly trying to be explosive. I don't know if these decks are quite trying to do that, because there is also a grindy element to at least the teamer version. Maybe it makes sense in the red-green one, but even then, part of that, the point of playing the red-green one is that you're playing cards like Tarmogoyf that are theoretically harder to interact with anyway. And if you're, so because that deck is trying to prioritize being difficult to interact with, then it makes less sense to try to make your card more to invest resources in making your card more explosive at the same time. I mean, it makes sense to me that they don't play Mutagenic Growth currently. I don't know if it would make sense to, like, I think it might make sense to play it if you change the deck and have Show-Off.
So I felt like if I had to look at this list and have to ask the question, what do I cut for the Show-Off? I think the weakest creature in the deck is Soulscar Mage. So I can see, you know, cutting this, but obviously you're cutting a 1-drop for a 2-drop, so
yeah,
it can never be so good.
I would.
So the question is, maybe you're trimming a little bit on the card advantage plan of Iterations, Quest, and Druid.
I'm guessing the more expensive spells, although you don't want to cut too many of them for the same reason that I mentioned, that I think they actually get better when you're plotting Slingshot Show-Off. So I'm guessing you would cut some number, I don't know what the combinations would be, but some number of Soulscar Mage, Unholy Heat, and Questing Druid, probably. I'm not sure what the numbers
would be. What about Underworld Breach?
I think that one adds a lot to your deck, just by, you know, like, but I think it actually changes how your deck works. Like, you have, like, a whole combo element just because you have this, like, one slot in your deck. I feel like that adds maybe too much to cut. Maybe it's possible that we want to get rid of it, but I think that first copy just lets you have a kind of combo kill in your deck that you otherwise don't have. Like, maybe it's possible that Show-Off also lets you do that, but, I mean, this is just a non-creature way of accessing those, so it's possible. It's possible. I hadn't really considered that as much,
I agree, but I think with
it could
you.
Be the case, yeah.
I agree with you that you should have one under a breach. I wasn't playing it today in the red-green deck, but I felt like one is definitely a card that could just win you a game out of nowhere. And you have Questing Druid, in this deck you have Preordained Iteration, so you actually dig towards that. What do you think about a Surveilland in this deck? You're playing 28 1-drops, 9 2-drop, and nothing else. So,
well, to me, that's the reason why I can't play a Surveilland, because the tap line is so much worse in this kind of deck, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but still, you know, Surveillands have proven to be great in any deck with fetch lands. So this deck has a lot of them. Obviously, I had spots today. I mean, I was thinking about that a lot today when I was playing. And I had spots today when I was like, naturally, if you play a league, you'll have a spot where you just fetch for a tap land and do nothing on turn, whatever, 3 or 4. But, like, is that... Would that gain me enough advantage than a tap land on turn 1 on a 1-lander? Because that can definitely keep a 1-lander. Like, I did that today with, you know, a Channeler Bubble, or just, in this case of blue, you have Preordain. So if that tap land... If that land would have been a tap... You know what I mean, right? Like, what do you think is the weight of gaining versus losing?
Well, it's very hard to conceptualize this because it's so much easier to see, like, you just, because, like, it's easier to identify the benefit from something that comes up very often and is a small benefit, as opposed to one that is rarer but is an absolute disaster. Like, I mean, actually drawing a Surveil land is I think often going to be unacceptable. I think it's very hard to weigh these things up, and I honestly don't think people would usually play enough games to be able to figure that out, right? I mean, it's not like it's just random. Like, if you just play like 20 games or something, it is random how often each of those cases comes up. And even then, you're trying to weight how good or bad each of those cases is, so there's still some subjective element to it. So it's kind of something you have to reason out. And, well, I'll be honest, I don't really know the answer yet, but my intuition is that if you're playing this many cheap spells, and there is some degree of speed that matters, that it becomes irrelevant. The other thing about Surveil lands in this deck is that so many of your cards are interchangeable, I think, for the most part. I mean, obviously you have some cards like Breach that are very distinct, but for the most part you just, like, I don't know, you have creatures and cards that synergize with them, right? Then they're not creatures. Like, most of your creatures are the same as each other, just as insofar as much that can be true, and a lot of your spells are very similar as well. Like, I think a Surveil land might make more sense if there was a more pressing need for card selection, I would say. But
yeah, I think that the Canopy land actually serve a similar role, and you can already obviously play them. Obviously, you can't fetch for them, so it's much worse. But I think if you want to add like a spell land slot, I think Fiery Islet is better in this deck.
Yeah, that's what I would guess. I'm not entirely sure, because obviously I've not actually played this deck, much less the Surveil lands, but
obviously.
No, that would be my guess. Yes.
Yeah. A card I was impressed today in the red-green deck was Blood Moon. Actually, in the metagame, there's all the Leyline of the Guild Pact decks. Amulet Titan is obviously a very well-played and good deck. All the Leyline Binding decks. So, again, I am kind of like winking my eye at the red-green deck, trying to think about maybe I just want to play this, you know, changing a lot of cards here. Again, I really love Tarmogoyf lately. And Slickshot Show Off, of course, is another 2-drop, so you can't play too many of those. But this was something I like today doing with, like, I definitely want to play four Pick Your Poison. Okay. I know that. Like, this card is so massive. Like, you just, you know, in so many matches, like today, I believe I cited in Pick Your Poison and Destructive Revelry, like almost every matchup. There's just so many targets for those nowadays. You know, between Leyline Binding and so that is, or is a saga, of course. So I'm kind of in the prowess theme, and I want to do something with the Slickshot Show Off again, mostly because this is one of the few cards that really sparked my eye. Like I remember last episode we were talking about Mono Black with the Insatiable Avarice, that is the Painful Truth / Vampiric Tutor spree card. And I also remember asking in the Carnage Discord what you guys thought about Harvester of Misery Mono Black. But
ultimately, even if these are playable, and you know, they might very well be, they're kind of marginal. You know, like I mentioned that maybe we put Harvester of Misery in Living End, but ultimately it's not super different to Bone Crusher Giant. I think it is probably a bit better, but it's mostly the same card. Whereas if you have a deck with Slickshot Show Off, it actually does something novel. Like, it's really new, right? Like, you do stuff that you couldn't do before with it. You get to play with a new mechanic that you haven't played before. You know, I think, yeah, I mean, also this kind of literally has Show Off in the name. I only just thought about that. But, yeah, I mean, I get that. What were you saying?
Yeah. You can kill your opponent on turn 3 so easily with this card. Like, I can definitely see a scenario where you win on turn 3 with this card. I don't know. Winning on turn 3 sounds so exciting to me.
Well, like, you can try. Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I see this as more exciting, like, as well.
Yeah, like, today... I win a match on turn 4, you know, and through several interactions, and I wasn't even playing this card, so it's definitely something that I want to be doing, and something that I think will be just, like, I can also say that this is like an easy deck building. Like, you don't need too much to build a prowess deck with this card, right?
I don't know. I mean, Because I think this card, in the same way that I think this card adds something to your deck, I think that also means that may have more implications than we realize. Like how I mentioned that I thought that mutagenic growth didn't particularly make sense in the existing builds and agreed with them not playing it. whereas I've become less sure of that if we are playing cards like Slick Shot Show Off. So I think, I mean, what I would say is that you probably can't go very wrong, but figuring out the best way to do it is probably a bit trickier than it might seem. But I don't really know how, which is the whole point. Like, the very fact that this card adds something new means that I also don't expect to be able to figure everything out about it very quickly. If that makes sense.
Okay, Anthony, do you have any other topic you want to discuss with the listeners and me, or are you
good to wrap it up? Not in particular. I'm very occupied lately, so I was happy to let you take the lead.
Yeah, we're both, of course, very busy with the PT testing. That's why we're not going to be recording in the next weeks. Anthony, why don't you say to the
listeners? Yeah, so we will still have an episode next week that we'll record. We'll record one later this week. It'll be me, Javier, and our teammate Isaac Bullwinkle, and we'll be talking about a topic that a few people asked us about, and I think would be very interesting, especially with the three of us, and we'll be talking about how players can improve over time. You know, like a lot of the time, we talk about how to prepare for a tournament that's coming up, right? Or that's a lot of our focus is on what's coming up. But thinking about how to make yourself better as a player is something that's really interesting and something that we are very interested in. So I think that's what we're going to talk about when we record later this week, and we'll put that episode out. We'll record quite late in the week because we've been very busy and leading up to that, but we'll put that out next week for you, so you still have content from the carnies while we're gone for that first week. And then I think we probably won't return until after the Pro Tour, but the Pro Tour is not actually that far, so we won't actually be gone very long because we have that that episode in, and then we'll be back after that. So I think we're probably only off for a week then, right, Mengu? Is that right? We're here next week, then we're not here the next week,
I think.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Just 1 week. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we made a plan to fill in.
Then we return and we discuss about how the PT went, as we always do. So last PT, we had Javier coming ninth. The previous event, the Worlds, you made yourself four. Before that, Javier top eighted two PTs in a row. So I would say that we have had some nice post-analysis Pro Tour episodes so far.
Yeah, you know, there's three of us. Hopefully one of us does well enough to celebrate something, and if not, there'll be something to talk about. It's always a good experience anyway. You learn a lot, see a lot, do a lot. There'll be plenty to talk about post PT for sure. We always barely fit in what we want to say. Or rather, we don't even fit all of it in, do we? It's very hard. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Of course, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/carnies, where you can join and talk to us about what, whatever goes up on your mind on competitive magic. I want to thank Marvin Reina, who was our last subscriber on the Patreon. So, you know, thank you for that. And yeah, that's it, Anthony. I'm going to say goodbye to all of you for a couple of weeks for me. Again, I'll be listening to Anthony, Javier, and Isaac episode on the airplane for sure. I always look for... Oh, also, I wanted to mention another podcast I just was part on, and I think that is the one with Humans of Magic. I don't know, Anthony, if you've ever listened to Humans of Magic,
oh, this guy's
Javier
great.
Also
oh,
had
it's
an
awesome.
Interview.
Yeah. This is awesome, yeah.
Yeah, Javier has an interview with him, with James, and I made a very, a nice episode, I think. I opened myself very much to James. He was nice, and
he's a very good interviewer.
To that one as well.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
Top stuff.
Very, very. Okay, that's gonna be it. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great rest of the day.
All right, cheers.